I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
The best Jew in the world, and this is episode 20 of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. On this episode, well, I can't go through the month of August without releasing one episode dedicated to the event of the summer, the party of the summer, SummerSlam. So on this episode, we're reviewing SummerSlam 2005, one of my personal favorites. I had a hard time deciding. If I seem a little apprehensive right now, it's once again, I am recording at my college. I am recording outside in the quad. But unlike last time where it was summer and there really wasn't anybody around, in particular at that point of the day, and, you know, but the kids on the other side and they were all in their classroom. Now next session has started, so people are walking all around, and it's been really hard to find a really private spot that doesn't have a lot of traffic. It's actually cool, but thankfully it's getting cooler, so, you know, at some point I'm probably going to sit in the middle of the quad. It is quite apprehensive, you know, in particular when I get to the end of each episode and I have my little screaming thing. You know, you feel like a jackass screaming, "I'm the best Jew in the world," and everybody's listening to you. I mean, it's true and all, because it's true. It's damn true, but still, you know, nobody likes feeling like they're a jackass. I really don't know what being a jackass feels like. I mean, I'd have to ask somebody who knows. Maybe there's somebody in my listening audience who knows what it's like. Not that I'm gonna names, you know. You know what? I know. Let me just call up Bo Dallas. I'm sure he knows what it means to be a jackass. But I digress. So, before I get into things proper, actually, I'm going to go over what the future is going to be for this podcast. It's nothing like that. I'm going to be continuing the podcast in every way I can. But it might be like this for a while, where it might even be just one episode a month. I'll definitely try to get two a month out. But for those who don't know, as I said, I'm going to college. I have 5 classes. I also have to work. So a lot of homework, a lot of work, and I'm not going to have a lot of time for podcasts. I do have some specials planned out, some stuff that I've taped at Otakon and Anime Next that I plan on the other point is, well, hopefully by the end of this coming month, September, my family will be moving to a bigger place. a place to where, you know, I might even be able to do video. Yeah. I'm moving, so I have a lot of things going on, so I don't have a lot of time for podcasts. So that's why you don't see as much stuff, because to be quite honest, I did have plans to do an entire month of SummerSlam. I had plans to do some other pay-per-views, and it's not worked out for them at the time. I do hope to at least get 3 episodes out in October, as I plan on covering Halloween Havoc. Every episode, if there's more than one released in October, will be Halloween Havoc. So, look forward to that. So, just to give you guys a head up, I am not quitting at all. It's just that my time is very limited. At least until I get the number of quests where I can transfer and I can focus on college full-time and quit. And that way, I can then put some more time back into podcasting and this gig, which... I always love podcasting, and we have fun. In fact, that's one of the things I'm going to college for, is to increase my ability to podcast to you. But, you know, that's the future! You know, the future, hopefully not the future where Bo Dallas is WWE champion. Hopefully not that future, because that's a terrible, horrible future, and I don't believe in that. Let's get to today's review, which is, as I said, SummerSlam 2005. Now, again, this was during the time where I just got back in, well, not just got back into wrestling, but around the time where I was able to actually start ordering pay-per-views. You know, WrestleMania 21 was really the big one, first one that I had really ordered. You gotta understand, I mean, I had ordered a pay-per-view or two in... like the late 90s. I mean, I think I ordered Halloween Havoc, in fact, to be quite honest. But we really never had money for the pay-per-views. And so it was always hearing about it. And then in 2005, you know, I finally had some money of my own. And, you know, I would pay my mom extra and I would get the pay-per-view myself. Which was very expensive because they were like $50 and the next year was $60. Again, this is Florida. So... 2005 was around the time where I was finally able to purchase pay-per-views. And so this really was the second pay-per-view I got, really. Again, a lot of the events happening at SummerSlam that stemmed from storylines that had been built from WrestleMania 21. And, you know, I mean, I love this time frame. You know, this is the time for John Cena, obviously a champion. But when just becoming champion, he still had that badass motif. And, you know, there are a lot of interesting things to talk about with these matches, which I'll get into. In regards to John Cena, in regards to Batista, and how the championships were portrayed. But all in all, you know, I'll be honest, I was very surprised in rewatching this pay-per-view and how really good it was. I just think that this SummerSlam is probably one of the most solid SummerSlams you'll ever watch. Whether it's one of the best, I think that's open to interpretation of different people. It's definitely one of my favorites, but, you know, it's probably not going to be that way for a lot of people. So, let's break it down, shall we? WWE SummerSlam took place on August 21st, 2005. At an attendance of 18,156 at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., featuring the brands of Raw and SmackDown, and is sponsored by THQ. And it features the tagline of Hogan versus Michaels for the first time ever. So ladies and gentlemen, let's get into SummerSlam 2005.
I won't defend you anymore, you see.
interesting to bring up is, you know, you. It's funny how long ago this was that you had two future ESPN Sports Center and other show sports sort of sit down show or particular on this broadcast. I mean, you had Jonathan Coach, who again ESPN anchor now, along with, you know, he does NBA stuff for ESPN, and Todd Grisham, who again does Sports Center and is works particular with Friday Night Fights now. So, you know, just go to commentators for Raw, you had Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Jonathan Coach. SmackDown had Cole and Taz. You had the spinners and the themes of Carlos Cabrera and Hugo Savanovic. Interviewer being Todd Grisham, who I think we only really see once. Ring announcer is Lilian Garcia, who also sung the national anthem, and Tony Schimmel. With the general managers being Eric Bischoff and Theodore Long. And our referees for the evening would be Mike Chioda, Jack Doan, Chad Patton, Brian Hebner, Jim Corderas, Nick Patrick, and Charles Robinson. So let's get into the first matches that go down to the list here. And that actually would be our dark match, our Sunday Night Heat match. That would be Chris Masters versus the Hurricane. Again, I can't remember this. Hopefully at some point they, you know, that's going to be a special episode to where, oh, they released a Sunday night episode. So I'm going to go back and watch every match that I wasn't able to review and tell them whether they're good or not. Apparently Chris Masters defeat the Hurricane. Apparently Chris Masters had kryptonite. I would imagine he defeated him with the Master Lock. It's only a wild guess. Because at this time, Chris Masters had the whole Master Lock is unbreakable thing going. Oddly enough, the Sunday Night Heat match lasted longer than the first match of the evening. So, let's go on and we kick off SummerSlam proper with Chris Benoit versus Orlando Jordan, who is the current United States champion, for the WWE United States Championship. And if anybody remembers this match, you know that Chris Benoit defeats Orlando Jordan in 25 seconds to become the new WWE United States Champion. I mean, I don't think that's much of a spoiler. You know, it was an interesting way, and if you guys have heard me talk about this past year's SummerSlam, and if you've listened to the WrestleCast, I know you have. Yes. Obviously, I had problems with it. No, not because Cena lost. I mean, I have problems with Lesnar being a champion. I mean, I guess we'll see how the storyline ultimately goes. And if they do have Cena win it back at Night of Champions, I know people disagree with me on this. I'll forget the storyline a bit because, okay, so they were basically doing a Rocky III storyline. That being said, my bigger issue was how they did the storyline and the booking of the event. You know, I'm a firm believer that you book an event and you do storylines of matches to build up the event and to build up towards the story. There are little hints they've always done this. They give you telltale signs to what's going to happen in the pay-per-view, or at least later in the pay-per-view. And if you really want to mix up the what you think people are going to happen, you do things. You have certain people win on that night, you have certain people win certain ways during the night to really add to the suspense of the match later in the night. This pay-per-view is a perfect example of that, because there are things that will happen early on that will allow for certain emotions and certain beliefs of things that will happen towards, in particular, the Hogan Shawn Michaels main event. Now, Chris Benoit defeating Orlando Jordan was just this very quick barn burner of a match that just, it got people's, that was the point. The point was, you know, they had done this feud long enough, everybody knew Chris Benoit would win, so they did this quick victory, and it started the end of this feud where, basically, Benoit just gets these quick submission victories over Orlando Jordan. But the other part of that was, again, it was just to really rile up. Here, you have this hero that everybody likes winning the championship. Right away, quick fashion, with a submission, it gets the crowd really riled up. So that I thought was a great booking decision there to have that be the first match of the night, and to have him win in 25 seconds. That leads directly into the next match, which has a lot of emotion. So you have the crowd hyped up for because of that match, and that hype leads into this match that has a lot of emotion because it's two fan favorites. As our next match on the card is Edge with Lita versus the man who will not die, Matt Hardy, in what is supposed to be a singles match. Damn. I mean, this match goes on for 4 minutes and 50 seconds. And damn. You really believed in this match. And this, I think this is sometimes the brilliance of the WWE. The WWE can take a real-life situation happening. And in this case, for those who don't know the story, if you go back and watch this, like, oh, was this all a storyline of Edge stealing Matt Hardy's girl? No, this is a real-life thing that eventually broke and the audience got wind of. Was that basically, you know, everybody knew that Amy DeMoz and Matt Hardy were, you know, Amy Lita's real name, were together. And there was this real life thing to where basically, or at least a lot of people thought, that basically Edge, who was also known, as they were real, also known as Adam Copeland, basically stole Lita from Matt Hardy. A lot of people didn't like it. That was a real life thing. It caused a lot of beef backstage. I do believe it's actually one of the things that led to Matt Hardy being released, ultimately. About a year earlier, I want to say. Or maybe a year or two. And so, I guess they had decided to rehire Matt, and they basically, hey, let's do this storyline of this return. And so there was a lot of emotion in this match, and I have to tip my hat to the WWE of, like, there's a lot of emotion because these are two fan-favorite wrestlers. Edge, who's becoming a very big heel at this point, being the Money in the Bank champion, becoming the ultimate opportunist. And ultimately, that's what the match did. The match really made people hate Edge. I mean, again, Edge wins this match by basically beating Matt Hardy so senseless that the referee has to stop the match for Matt Hardy's health. That because he had to cut. And by the way, great acting by Matt Hardy in this match. Oh my god, he really, really looked out of it. But again, it accomplished what it did. You had Edge winning and gaining a tons of more heat. I mean, people hated him before, but now they really, he got that win. And it wasn't a dirty win. It was a clean win where he basically made it so Matt Hardy could not continue. Beat him senseless. But there's another thing that this match did. This match set up a precedent for referees acting a certain way. You know, because you have the referee stopping the match because, you know, too much blood, because Matt Hardy was out of it. That sets up for later. It gives you think, like, when certain things are happening in certain matches later on, oh my god, the referee might actually stop this match. You know, it makes that idea believable and possible. So, then we lead into what could have been the match of the night if not for two botches. And we'll talk about them. But it's still a very enjoyable match. I mean, it's a match that made it to the top 10 list of, you know, recently in WWE Countdown, they had the top 10 ladder matches, and this made the list. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero. It says here with Vicky Guerrero, but she in the back and doesn't come out till later in the match. In a ladder match for the custody of Rey Mysterio's adopted son, Dominic. Now, you want to talk about emotion. And again, the emotion. And again, now, this shows you probably how tight Eddie and Rey were as friends and how tight their family was. They could actually do this storyline. They had trust in each other. Yeah, I can bring my son and do this storyline where you're basically pretending that you're his real father. So this, I think that really shows the trust in their friendship. Because there was a lot of emotion in this match. I mean, I remember the build-up to all of this. And this is really a match that built up over months of this thing from WrestleMania where Ray beat Eddie. And Eddie wants to prove that he can beat Ray. And he can't. He keeps losing to Ray. And, you know, so he sticks to him by basically revealing the secret that he's the real father of Dominic. And then he gave him up for adoption to Ray and Angie. And just the emotion in this match and the storytelling by these wrestlers in this match was, oh my god. It was a spot fetch. No doubt it was a spot fetch. Because, you know, it didn't need to be this fast-paced, climbing-the-ladder type of match. It could be a spot fetch because there was also that storytelling element and that emotion. Now, I think it does get a bit slow in some places, but still the match, I think, works really wonderfully. And, you know, I give them all the credit in the world. I mean, as far as moving slow, it's the matter of, it's like, in particular, there's a time where Eddie had more than enough time to really take that suitcase the suitcase with the custody papers off the hook. I mean, great job by Eddie acting like he couldn't unhook it for whatever reason. But still, yeah, that was a little bit unbelievable. And then, of course, you had the two big botches in the match. The big one was the Sunset Flip Powerbomb by Eddie Guerrero. You know, classic where he leaps over the ladder. And he did this with RVD, and it was a wonderful spot. He does it here with Ray. His hand slipped when he landed. I mean, great job by Rey Mysterio to make it look like, you know, he pulled just enough and really delayed his fall to really try to make it look, but it still looks bad. But again, they're professionals and they moved on. I mean, these weren't like, oh my god, botches, they completely ruined the match. They were bad botches, but credit to them to try to make them work. And then the other one after that was the backdrop botch, where I think Eddie caught enough of the ladder, but it's just, he moved in such a way to where he basically pushed the entire thing and made Ray fall. That was a botch. And again, and I guess taking too long in that one moment where Eddie has the suitcase, that's another botch as well. But still, you know, the moves that did work, and really what these botches did, the real problem that they caused the match, I think, was that they sort of stopped the momentum. Now, they did things to get it back, but never to the point to where they could. And I can only imagine how awesome this match would have been if it hadn't been for those botches. But with all that being said, what really drove the match was the emotion of the storyline. I mean, little Dominic at the time was just, I mean, you really believed this kid thought that, oh my god, my father's gonna lose, and you know, it didn't feel like acting. You know it's fake, but you know, usually you don't see a kid act that good. But damn, he did. And then Vicky Guerrero. I think that may be the only time I cheered for Vicky Guerrero. And it was just this great little storyline where Vicky, like, everybody knows that Eddie's, even his own wife, and his wife doesn't want this to happen, so helps Ray. And by the way, I do have one more note on this. When Ray wins, and it was great emotion. By the way, I loved Taz's and Cole's commentary through this entire match. I think it was brilliant, to be quite honest. But there's a moment where Angie comes out of the match, and it's like released at the mother of, like, oh my god, this match is over. I can take my child away from this. She was. I wouldn't be surprised to learn that maybe Miss Mysterio wasn't too happy that they included her child in a WWE storyline. But, you know, that's it. So she had these two high-octane, high-emotional matches. And so WWE smartly, I think, books the next match to basically be a comedy match. Everybody knows who's going to win. And that is Kurt Angle versus Eugene with Christy Hemmings, God knows why, for Kurt Angle's Olympic gold medals. Now, at this point, Kurt Angle had been doing these 3-minute challenges for his gold medals, and Eugene somehow won them. God only knows why. Yeah, Kurt Angle pretty much dominates the match. Pretty much. Here's the thing. This is how you know the smart marks were in the crowd, because everybody was cheering for Angle. Hell, I mean, I don't think anybody likes Eugene. I don't like Eugene. Wait a minute, Mr. Disability doesn't like Eugene? Yeah, I didn't like the wrestler with disabilities. I hated Eugene. And I was cheering for Kurt Angle to whoop his ass. So, I mean, I think... And they played it smart, because they knew, I think, everybody wanted Kurt Angle to whoop Eugene's ass. I think that's why they put Christy Hemme, because it's one of those things where he's a face, but everybody hates him, because he's a goody-two-shoes. He's the only other person other than John Cena to make it work, by the way, because of what his character was. And that's why I think they stuck Christy Hemme with him, because that... Because that really made the fans hate him. But it's like, damn. And so when Kurt Angle finally puts him in ankle, like, yeah, we're all cheering, snap his ankle! Snap his ankle! So it was a nice little fun match with comedy thrown in. That it was the breather match. It was that nice little fun, but it still was a solid match. Our next match is Randy Orton, and as we'll find out later, with Cowboy Bob Orton, versus The Undertaker in a rematch of their WrestleMania match. You know, really good match. Again, this really showed that Randy Orton had a huge future awaiting him as a major star in the WWE. Him and Undertaker put on a really solid match. And the really shocking, and you know, give it up to the WWE. They really sold. I mean, the thing is, you should know by now, if they're showing a fan jumping into the ring, if they have a choice at all, but they're not. It's like a person running onto the field. They're not going to show somebody jumping into the ring. And they've had this, unfortunately, show it sometime. You have to know that if you do see somebody from the crowd jumping into the ring, it's usually somebody who is part of the story. But they sold it so well that you really thought it was a fan. Because they showed the guy popping on the security right after him and trying to push him away. And they sold it very, very well. And of course that shock where the RKO comes right after Randy Orton gets a clean win, or so you think, until it's revealed that the guy coming in the ring is Cowboy Bob Orton. So I do like the ending. I like how it continued the storyline between Orton and Undertaker. It was a solid match. And, yeah. It was something different of, like, you have this sort of clean win. Here's where I'm going to get some heat, folks. Our next match is my match of the night. Are you really surprised at this point? I adjust my sitting as I've been sitting on a ledge for the past half hour. But But our next match is for the WWE Championship and features the champion John Cena versus the challenger Chris Jericho. Now, I love this match. This was a great match. Both wrestlers put on an absolutely spectacular show, I thought, in this match. Great back and forth. You had the young John Cena. Yeah, he was still, in a way, kind of green. So, ladies and gentlemen, you want to know how much of a pussy I am? I just got scared by a worm. I'm sitting out some dirt, and like I pushed some dirt up, and like a giant worm appeared. I'm like, holy fucking shit!
Live TV is awesome.
John Cena was really, really green at this time. And Chris Jericho was at his best. He was getting ready to leave the company for the first time since he basically debuted. I believe so. Somebody can correct me on that. But I thought it was a great, solid back and forth match. I very much enjoyed it. Wow, the worm is really throwing me off. Now I'm saying a wet spot. That's not PG. But I thought it was a great back end. And really what made this match was the crowd. You had half the, and this is what really has started this thing for John Cena that made John Cena one of the most unique wrestlers. This is really the beginning of it. To where you have half the crowd for Cena and half against him. Now, it wasn't like it is today to where you have half the crowd going, let's go Cena, and the other going saying Cena sucks. In this case, it was you had 9,000 Chain Gang fans, and you had 9,000 Jerichoholics. And just that sight, it was one of the most amazing sights. Even the announcers of Lawler, Ross, and Coachman were amazed by this sight of where you had ninth, let's go Cena, let's go Jericho, let's go Cena, let's go Jericho, let's go. Those are the moments that tell you that these wrestlers are big. And that, I think, is one of those first indications that, they obviously had high hope for John Cena because they gave him the championship at WrestleMania, but I think that's what really started to solidify the idea of John Cena being a main event star and the face of WWE, because really he was able to get that type of response with Jericho. I mean, it took Jericho to do it well, but time and time again you would see to where John Cena matches would get that type of response. You would get that type of response later with the feud between Kurt Angle. You would get it later against Triple H, against Edge, against Shawn Michaels, against Randy Orton, even more recently with Bray Wyatt. So, yeah, this, I think, was really showed the future for John Cena. Again, it's match of the night because, it was just a solid, great wrestling match with a great superstar. Two guys wanting to be the champion, the best in the world. And John Cena, again, a great counter to end the match to where the little tilt-a-whirl into the FU. It's a great storyline throughout the entire match. So I really enjoyed it. Our next match, I thought was a good brawl match. It was half the length of the other championship match, and that is the champion, Dave Batista, or Batista in this case, the World Heavyweight Champion versus JBL, John Bradshaw, in a no-holds-bar match for the World Heavyweight Championship. This was just an all-out brawl from the start. I mean, no-holds-bar. I mean, literally, JBL attacks him as the fireworks are going off, and it's on like Donkey Kong. Again, I love the idea of, you know, again, great heel move by JBL attacking Batista before he can even really get his hometown pop. And it was just a brutal ball and had a lot of good spots. And that big final spot to where, you know, Batista gets the Batista bomb, goes to cover, but pauses. And I think it was like just in the time that pause and that slung over to the steel steps that JBL had brought in perfectly. Picks him up, Batista bomb on the steel step with a thundering thud, 1, 2, 3. Great spot. It was a very solid match. It was a great brawl. This is probably my second favorite match of the night. I don't know. I know John Cena and Chris Jericho are number one. I'm looking at like, oh my god, I have to make a decision between these four now? Wonderful. Because, you know, the two other matches had so much emotion. You know, this was a solid match, and it was fun to watch, but I don't know. We'll get to that when I have to count down my top three matches of the night. So I don't know if I'm gonna retain that thing I just said about being my second favorite match of the night for right now. But it's a solid match, a great brawl. And, you know, I mean, it created an everlasting memory. When you talk about the feud between JBL and Batista, the one move everybody remembers is the Batista bomb on the steel steps. So it created the moment of the feud, definitely. And that brings us to our main event for the evening. For the children watching at home. And the thousands in attendance. This is the main event. Ladies and gentlemen, Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels. In what was truly once in a lifetime. Yes, WWE, we will never let that go. But any dang how. You know what? This was a really solid match. Yeah, I mean, it was slow in some places, and there were definitely some spots that looked very kooky, which I'll talk about in a second. But overall, for Hogan being, what, a 52, 53-year-old man at this point, this was a solid match. And I thought it was very enjoyable. I mean, it was old school wrestling. I mean, Hogan did his moveset, Shawn Michaels did his moveset. They didn't do anything new or new school or anything. But, you know, I think everybody wanted that. Everybody wanted a nice little cheesy, good storyline to match. That's what I was expecting. I'm sorry if you went in expecting to see 450 splashes or independent wrestling. But, you know, this was just a cheesy throwback match. And I loved it for that. I expected that, and that's what I got. And you know what? It was a very solid match. I thought Shawn Michaels and Hogan worked really well together. The only thing I think that hurts it was there are two spots that really didn't look believable. One was the sharpshooter. Now, mind you, it was a brilliant idea to use the sharpshooter. Because throughout the match, there's these Hogan fans saying, "You screwed Brett! You screwed Brett!" And it keeps getting louder and louder as the match continues. And so I'm like, okay, I screwed Brett? All right. So he turns and puts Hogan in the sharpshooter. Now, the problem with it is that I don't know who's at fault. I think it's a combination of, again, Shawn's not adept at using the sharpshooter. Because it really wasn't his move. It was Bret Hart's move. I mean, even if you look at him using the sharpshooter, when he uses it like at the Montreal Screwjob, he really doesn't have a really in the way it should be. But also, you know, it has to be put in that he can only lean back so far because of Hulk Hogan's hips, which were bad even then. I mean, they've been bad since the mid-90s. Let's be honest about that. But so it didn't really look like a really good sharpshooter. The lead-up and the storyline aspect of it was wonderful. But the... I'm scared of a little worm. I'm 5'9". I'm over 350 pounds. I'm scared of a little fucking worm. But then again, it's probably because that worm is called Bo Dallas. And I don't want to be near anything that believes in anything. But the other spot was... And I do not know why Shawn Michaels did this. I mean, I don't know if this caused any friction or anything. But when Hulk Hogan hits the big boot, Shawn Michaels does this cheesy where he gets knocked down, jump back up, does like something like Flair would do, and just completely over-cheeses it. I'm sorry, that's on Michaels? And that really seemed disrespectful to me. Now, I don't know if he meant it to be disrespectful or whatever. I don't know why he did it, but it just, it kind of ruined the match. It was an oversell. Mind you, he kind of oversold on a lot of maneuvers, but it was never too far over. Like, if he oversold on maneuvers as he did throughout the match, they weren't completely oversold. They were slight oversells. But that big boot, he sold that, he oversold it so much that, you know, WWE told him that he has to give some money back. I mean, really oversold that, and it just looked wrong. But, you know, it was a cheesy match. And again, remember I brought up the blood, in particular with the Edge and Matt Hardy match, how that really played into, like, you thought, when Hogan got cut up, they might start to stop the match. And it really looked like they might stop the match. And again, they had a lot of, you know, with Edge winning and Kurt Angle and Randy Orton winning. I mean, and that's the thing, is you had this good balance with Edge, Angle, and Orton, who are heels, winning. But then on the other side, you had, and let's add to that Chris Masters. And you had, so that's four. You had Benoit, Mysterio, Cena, and Batista, the Face is winning. So, they did a good job of really not tipping the cap to who might win. You know, I'm sure Hogan had it in a contract, and not that much of a surprise that he would. At the same point in time, because they always give tips, and they always give hints. And I don't care what anybody says, and Maddie J will disagree with me on this. And Maddie, I'm not throwing your name out there to be disrespectful. I'm sad because you're the most recent person who brought it up with me in this discussion I've had with a couple people. But the WWE, I think, has always, because in every wrestling organization, always tips its cap to what's going to happen later in a night by the way it books its matches sometimes. And here, you didn't have that. It didn't tip its cap. Now, I thought that was wonderful by the WWE. And you know what? Say what you want about old Hogan wrestling. This was a nice, solid match, and it was fun to watch. So, top three maneuvers of the night. Number three would have to be the John Cena FU, the counter, tilt-a-whirl sort of counter into the FU. I like that. Number two... the Batista bomb of JBL on the steel steps. And my number one spot of the night had to be the springboard seated senton by Rey Mysterio over the ladder, almost decapitating Eddie Guerrero. I mean, there were a lot of good spots in that match, but that was like the big one that just like amazed me the most. And as far as favorite matches of the night, So number three is Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels. I thought that was the third best match of the night. Batista and JBL have been knocked out of it after further thought. So number two is Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero, just because of the emotion and the storyline in that match. I thought it was wonderful. But my number one match of the night, John Cena versus Chris Jericho. You know what? You watch that match again. It's a wonderful title match. Great back and forth. Solid wrestling by both competitors. And it really shows the sort of future of John Cena as the face of the company. And here's the other thing that this really showed. It was something that was slowly happening, but it really wasn't until this pay-per-view that you really started to realize what had happened. And, you know, up until that past WrestleMania, really, in a way, since they had split and done two titles, the WWE title was really kind of like the secondary title. The big title for the past couple of years at that point had been the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw. And then John Cena and Batista won the titles. And I think somebody's like, really, that John Cena is going to make the WWE title bigger than the World Heavyweight title. And they made that switch of the WWE title to Raw, the World Heavyweight title to the SmackDown. And really, sure enough, you know, really, this is the point to where the WWE titles really started to become bigger than the World Heavyweight Championship. I mean, they're both prestigious titles, but, you know, when Brock Lesnar kept the championship, and, what was it, 2003 when they did that? 2002, 2003, I can't remember. And they ended up having to create another belt on Raw, and they brought the World Heavyweight Championship belt back. It was definitely a thing to where, you know, the World Heavyweight Championship felt like the more important belt. And when you had people like Goldberg going after it, and Triple H, and all the really big stars, because it always has been, as great as SmackDown was sometimes, it always did feel like Raw, like the bigger stars were on Raw. And it's, to a way, it has always been that way. So this was really that start of that turnaround to where the WWE Championship really became a bit more prestigious. And not a whole lot prestigious because of John Cena, mind you, than the World Heavyweight Championship. So, end of the day final ratings. You know what? I think this is a really solid pay-per-view. I enjoy it immensely. I really had fun watching it, and I really think it's probably one of the best SummerSlams the WWE ever put on. So I'm giving SummerSlam 2000 a 4.5 out of 5. It's not perfect by any means, because of botches and things like that, but still a great energy, a great atmosphere in Washington, D.C., a lot of solid, very good matches, and I highly suggest you go check it out. So, that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. I apologize for a lot of the technical difficulties again. It's hard to find a spot. We're always doing here to be sort of quiet and discreet and not have people looking strange. I mean, as I've done this, I've had people, even in this little area, on the quad walking by me. So, if you have any comments of any kind, remember there are several ways to contact the show. And please send in your contacts. I want to know what you people think. You can contact the show by emailing us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. And I promise you, if you send me emails, I will read them. And I go back onto my account and look at it. So if you send stuff, I will read it next time. You can contact us on Stitcher. Facebook, Stitcher at www.stitcher.com, and Facebook at www.facebook.com. Search for The Absolution Network. Find us there, and of course, you can always find us on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the To Taco Momentum, Tom's Prerogative, Jonas's To the Cast, and of course, Shin Tiger Curl, right here on the Absolution Network. And, of course, my new podcast, which comes out ironically, Tom's the Time of 10. Our latest episode features my top 10 favorite Robin Williams movies. Also, remember to check out the Shaft Plus podcast featuring Gene and Chris. My Tokyo SOS podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy featuring CM Jews, Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sideboard of the site. They do great stuff. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Chronicles, it's like his Major Spoilers podcast, Zach Joyner's Clone Saga Chronicles, and, of course, Scott Gunner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network. And that is it, my ladies and gentlemen, for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Actually, I do plan on getting an episode out in September. And our next episode takes place about a little over a year later. Takes place in September 2006. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to Unforgiven, where John Cena faced Edge. Or I believe where John Cena faced Edge. I hope I'm getting that right, or else I'm going to look like a complete jackass. But either way, I know it happened in September. We're going to basically relive the night that John Cena faced Edge at a TLC match in Toronto. Oh, if you hated me being a John Cena fan before, you ain't seen nothing yet. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I eat. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you, yes I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negativity. But I believe, yes I believe, I say that I believe. Stand on one feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and through the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of through the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what's this feeling? My love will be whole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be a hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legacy and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but your dream.